turning to face the crowd making its way from the lot. The reception is in the backyard!
You're yelling at the guests?
I said quietly.
Sorry!
He shouted. Then he looked at me again, his face serious. I wish you had stayed there in front of me that night, that you hadn't taken off.
I wish for a lot of things, I wanted to say, and yet I'd told him otherwise, and now it seemed wrong to change my mind. But I did, and now... I didn't finish this sentence, and he didn't either. We just stood there, guests streaming past, following the crowd ahead of them in, finally, the proper direction. In the night, there would be dancing dogs, clowns, giddy toasts, and teary goodbyes. All of this ahead, yet to unfold. Beginnings were always the best. I'm sorry, I said to him, about not telling you, and leaving, and everything else.
I'm sorry, too, he replied.
He swallowed, looking across the lot.
Next time, I'll know to say how I feel first, not bury the lead.
And I added, will be upfront about the things that really matter. No surprises. We looked at each other again. A man in a bow tie behind Ambrose paused, looking around him, then started to follow the path, going the right way.
Well, he said after a moment, the good news is we will be really good to whomever we date next. You're welcome.
Right back at you, I said, then smiled. Take care, Ambrose.
You too, he replied. Bye, Luna.
Then I walked away, across the lot to my car, and that was that. A proper goodbye. No one dashing away or leaving angry. No yelling or sudden, shattering disappearances with everything left unfinished. It was new for me, as so much had been with Ambrose from the start, and it felt like this should make me feel better, more at peace. But as I climbed behind the wheel, I began to cry. After all that, I needed something before seeing Ben. I decided it was coffee. Jump Java was quieter in the evening, and luckily Leo wasn't working. There wasn't even a line. But Phone Lady was still there, at a table for one, talking away. Tall latte with extra foam, I told the barista, an Asian girl with a cute pixie haircut. As she nodded, turning to start making it, I decided I'd have a donut, too. You want what you want, and sometimes it's sugar.
That's just the thing,
I could hear Phone Lady saying, her voice louder than ever in the less crowded space.
I never thought I would be dealing with all this. I had everything worked out, down to the minute. Yeah, best laid plans.
I looked at the clock by the espresso machine. It was just after 7. I was supposed to go buy Jumbo Smoothie, pick up Ben, and then we'd head to dinner with some of his friends before hitting yet another party. Normally, I liked the idea of a whole night still ahead of me, but right at that moment, I felt tired, and Phone Lady was still talking.
No, I'm thinking I need to focus on me. You know, self-care. Everything's been so hard lately, and I just can't devote time to another person, right?
The pixie barista turned back to me, sliding my cup across the counter. I was just about to ask for that donut when the door banged open. A group of women in workout wear carrying yoga mats came in, all talking at once.
Anything else? She asked me.
No, I said, glancing behind me. Too many people in too small a space. The donut could wait.
Just this.
As she rang me up, the door opened again, and more women in spandex and namaste t-shirts entered, clearly from the same class. Distantly, I could still hear Phone Lady, which meant she had to be practically shouting. I paid for my drink, grabbed a lid, and started to wind my way to the door through the ladies now lined up behind me, dodging flip-flopped feet and yoga bags. Despite my efforts, someone bumped me from behind just as I was passing phone lady's table, sending me stumbling into the back of her chair. When I hit it, she jerked forward, her phone falling from her grip and clattering across the floor. "Oh, God, sorry," I said, putting down my drink on an adjacent table and going to fetch it. "That was all my fault." "It's okay, I'll get it," she said quickly, right on my heels. "No, let me," I said. "It's the least I can do." She was still behind me, though, as I reached the phone, bending down to pick it up.
"Don't,"
she said. I knew the second I held it in my hand, something was weird. It wasn't just the screen, cracked, black, and dead, or the way it felt cold in my hand. You can just tell when something doesn't work or never did. All that talking, all those days. But no one was ever there on the other end. She was still standing right behind me, close enough that I could feel her breath on my back before I slowly turned around. "Here," I said quietly, holding it out to her. "Sorry again."
"It's fine," she said, grabbing it from me. "Don't worry about it."
And then she was walking away, back to her table, her dead phone in her hand. Maybe she put it back to her ear right away, or waited until I was gone. I wouldn't know. I was too sad to look. Chapter 26. "What do you think?" my mom asked, moving the daisies a bit more to the center. "Perfect, right?" It was. All of it, from the table set out on the back deck with our best wedding linens, votives, and vases, to the spread of stuffed olives, spanakopita, and pimento cheese, my favorites and William's specialties. For dinner, there would be thick steaks topped with onion rings and mashed potatoes that were mostly butter and cream, just like I'd requested. "It's great," I said, even as she continued to putter, moving a fork a millimeter to one side, then back again. Through the kitchen window, I could see William, his apron on, standing with Matt at the kitchen island. As it was for Ben and John, this dinner would be Matt's first formal introduction to our little family, such as it was, and it felt both strange and nice to see our numbers double after all this time. "You're nervous," I observed, as my mom moved the fork again. "Nonsense," she replied, not looking at me. "I just want everything to be perfect for my only daughter's birthday party." "Sure you do," I said, as she again glanced around the house to the driveway where John was due any moment. "You know I'm going to like him, right?"
"Oh, I know," she said, although she didn't exactly sound fully confident. "It's just my first boyfriend in 18 years. Kind of a big deal."
"Huge," I agreed. She shot me a look. "I mean in a good way. I'm going to be gone soon. You can't only hang out with William, especially if he's part of a couple now, too." With this, we both looked into the kitchen again, where William was pouring glasses of wine, one for him, one for Matt. He must have sensed our attention because he turned, blushing slightly, then looked flustered. Matt, however, waved cheerily. I waved back. "To be honest, I never thought something like this would happen for me," my mom said now, coming around to stand beside me. "You just get to the point where you think, well, that's over, you know? That part of my life. I was okay with it. I had what I thought I needed. You and William, my work. It all made sense." "But maybe," I said, reciting what I now knew to be one of her favorite lines from Workholes, "we don't always know what we need." She beamed at me, proud. "Exactly." William slid open the glass door, sticking his head out. We're on target for everything to come together by 6, just so you know.
You both ready for the guests?
You make it sound so formal, I said.
It's a celebration.
His phone beeped. He pulled it out, glancing at it. And as such, I think you might need shoes. I don't cook for barefoot people.
I have flip-flops in the kitchen, I said.
This is a party, he insisted. Throw me a bone, please. I looked at my mom, who shrugged so innocently it was obvious she was in on whatever he was up to.
What's going on? I asked.
Nothing, he said, and his phone beeped again. Just want everything to be perfect. My mom looked at me.
You might as well humor him. When he gets like this, there's really no other option.
Fine, I said. I'll go get some real shoes. As I started inside, passing Matt, who was arranging cheeses on a platter, I heard William say something to my mom, his voice low. She replied, also quietly, "Thick as thieves, some things never change." I climbed the stairs 2 at a time, glancing at the clock as I went. In my closet, I scanned the various options lined up against the wall, trying to decide which ones went best with what I had on. Then I saw the black sandals under that same colored dress, their beaded straps folded neatly around them. If I really was moving on, I thought, it was time to do it in all ways, not just some. I stepped closer, picking them up, and slid my bare foot into one. It still fit perfectly. The worn spot at the toe from all the walking that night instantly familiar, even as I'd long forgotten it. I'd just finished buckling them when I heard voices outside my open window. Walking over, I expected to see Ben or maybe Jilly and Michael Salem, who were also joining us. But the yard was empty. Whoever had arrived already out of sight under the front porch overhang. When I headed back downstairs to greet them, though, there was only William shutting the front door. When he saw me, he jumped, startled.
"You're supposed to be upstairs," he said, shifting what I now saw was a box in his arms, on the top the name of a bakery just down from the office.
"It only takes so long to pick out shoes," I said. "What's that?" He looked down at the box as if he'd never seen it before.
"This? Oh, nothing."
"Looks like a cake," I pointed out.
"It might be a cake," he said.
"It could also be any number of things that come in boxes." I cocked my head to the side.
"Looks like a cake," I said again.
"Fine," he sighed, shaking his head and looking at the ceiling. "If you must know, I must," I said. I always got such a kick out of seeing William squirm. It was like the best birthday present ever.
"I made you a chocolate chip cheesecake last night for your birthday. It was perfect, until I tried to put it into the car to bring here and dropped it all over the console."
"I love your chocolate chip cheesecake," I said. He gave me a pained look.
"Are you trying to make me feel awful?"
"William," I smiled. "It's fine. I love any kind of cake, you know that. I'm just glad we're all together."
"Well, this is from Sweet Tooth, so it's going to be good," he pointed out, nodding at the box. "Thank goodness Ambrose was just leaving the office and could run out and get one. He's a lifesaver. I just hope he has good taste in desserts. I left it all up to him."
"Ambrose?" I said. "That's who was just here?"
"Well, you weren't supposed to know," he said, "but clearly my shoe subterfuge was as lame as I suspected."
I turned, looking out the glass panel by the door. The street was quiet, no one in sight. What did I want to see, anyway? We'd wrapped things up as neatly as could be expected after all our messy threads. End of story, once and for all.
"William?" Matt called out from the kitchen. I'm wondering about crackers or baguette with this artisanal blue. Can you weigh in?
Coming,
he replied, setting the box down on the hallway table just as the doorbell rang. Immediately, my mom came inside from the back deck, smoothing her hair. I took a look through the glass. Standing there was a dark-haired man in a sport jacket, holding a huge bouquet of flowers. Behind me, William and Matt were huddled over the cheese plate, their voices low. I heard William laugh, the sound a comfort as always, then looked at my mom again, the smile that broke across John's face as she opened the door to face him. So much happiness at once, it was almost too much, like a bright light that made me squint. This was how it was supposed to be, I thought, as I walked over to the sweet tooth box, looking down at it. Carefully, I eased it open, immediately smelling sugar. The cake was round and chocolate-frosted, dotted with white icing roses. "Happy birthday, Luna," it said in an arc of perfect lettering on top, and below, smaller, "Make a wish." I blinked, immediately feeling a lump rise in my throat. "I left it all up to him," William had told me. I thought of that night with the candles, how frustrated I'd been by Ambrose's insistence on blowing them out his way, and then of the wish wall at Maya and Roger's wedding, the second chances I'd asked for. I'd made so many wishes, though, that hadn't come true. My mom was coming down the hallway now, John in tow. I saw she was holding his hand, her cheeks pink, happier than I'd ever seen her. "This is Luna," she said, taking my arm. "Luna, this is John Sheldon." "It's lovely to meet you," I said as the doorbell rang again.
"Happy birthday."
Up close, I saw what I thought was one big bouquet was actually two smaller ones. He handed me a bunch of daisies, then gave my mother the other, gorgeous, frilly peonies, her favorite. Nice.
"Thanks for inviting me."
"Of course," I said as the doorbell rang again. "One second, let me just get this. I think it's my boyfriend." As I left them, I realized this was the first time I'd referred to him this way out loud. It felt strange in my mouth in a way I hadn't expected, something I tried to swallow as I went down the hallway to the door. When I opened it, Ben was standing there with a bunch of balloons, more flowers, and what was clearly a tennis racket wrapped in pink paper decorated with hearts. He had his phone in his hand and snapped a picture of my face before I could even manage to smile.
"Hey," I said, blinking. "Is this the surprise?"
"One of them," he replied, stepping forward and kissing me on the cheek. "No dive bomb. I saw it coming and didn't flinch a bit."
"Sorry I'm late. There was all this traffic. A dog darted out in the road and some guy followed and got hit trying to grab it. Total gridlock."
Instantly, I felt cold. "A dog? Is everyone okay?"
"I don't know,"
he said, holding out the flowers to me. Roses this time, dark red.
"It had just happened when I drove by. All I saw was a bandana in the road."
He stepped past me then, inside, but I just stood there in the open door, frozen to the spot. Behind me, I could hear my mother, William, and their dates talking, the happy sounds of people meeting who have something important in common. The world always goes on, even when your own part of it stops. I knew this better than anyone. I was aware, too, how quickly you could lose the things you thought would be around forever, or at least long enough for you to change your mind.
"Luna?" Ben asked from behind me. "You coming?"
"Make a wish," the cake had read, and right then I knew what mine was. "Please, God," I thought, as I stepped over the threshold, hurrying down the stairs. When I got to the sidewalk, I reached down, unbuckling my shoes. Then I left them behind as I ran, barefoot, toward the growing sound of sirens. At first, all I could see were red and blue lights flashing. Traffic had slowed to a crawl in both directions, a single officer trying to wave people through one lane at a time. On both sides of the street, people had gathered, either alone or in clumps, eerily silent as they watched the paramedics working on someone by the curb. My heart was in my mouth, the beat filling my ears, as I rounded the corner, dodging around two women with strollers. One had a hand to her mouth, the other her baby in her arms, its chubby cheek pressed against her own.
"Careful!"
she called out to me, her voice sharp, part admonishment, part warning. But I'd been that way all this time, and it hadn't changed a thing. Maybe it was better to barrel through life, breaking fragile things and catching on every jagged edge. Neat or messy, calm or crazy, I still ended up in this same place. Finally, I reached the intersection, stumbling to a stop. I was vaguely aware of my feet hurting, skin split in places as I stood on the curb, scanning the stopped traffic all around me. Emergencies shouldn't feel the same, with similar colors and noises when each one is so unique, all its own. I thought of myself all those months ago, standing in the emptying hallway at school, gradually more and more alone as I stood on the edge of knowing and not, a place I'd later tell myself I would have returned to a million times over if I could. But now, I realized, it was really no better, that uncertainty. Even when there's still hope, it's hard to see, especially with tears in your eyes.
"Miss!"
I heard as I stepped off the curb, in between two cars. I could feel the heat coming off them, the warmth of the pavement under my feet, one of which was definitely bleeding now. A policeman blurred in my side vision, still yelling at me.
"You can't go there! Turn back!"
I didn't, pushing through past idling engines, the distant sound of radios, the hushed whispers of another set of bystanders now watching me.
"Miss!"
the cop yelled again. He was coming toward me now. I squeezed around a final bumper, feeling hot chrome on my leg, then looked to my right where the EMTs were huddled over something bulky in the road, a blanket draped across it. Everything got slower suddenly. The banging approach of the cop's footsteps, the slow roll of a nearby car creeping forward, my own breath now audible and jagged in my lungs. One of the paramedics was on his radio now, another racing along the opposite sidewalk with a gurney, wheels rattling. Every sound so specific and unique, I already knew I'd remember it later and forever. A sob escaped my lips, primal and terrifying, as I felt the cop grab my upper arm.
"Miss!" he barked, pulling me back. "You cannot be here! Go back to the sidewalk!"
"No!"
I said. His broad shoulders and dark uniform were blocking my vision. All I could see was myself thrashing in the mirrored lenses of his sunglasses. The outside view again, but this time I was fully within it as well. Why was it that you felt most alive at the moments so close to death?
"You don't understand!"
I was out of control. I knew this. He had to seize my other shoulder as I continued to try to dodge past.
"Can I get some help here?"
he barked over my head. Finally, I craned my neck enough to see around him. The paramedic was replacing his radio slowly, exchanging a look with his partner, who wasn't rushing anymore.
No,
I thought, a million memories spilling over in my brain all at once. That damp sand on the dark beach, a boy in a white shirt billowing, the bouncy notes of a pop song ringtone, all familiar like a slideshow I'd watched so many times. But then, as the cop gripped my arms, pushing me back, something else. A room full of flowers. A scruffy dog in my side view, his head out the window. Candles lit and then relit. A group of people moving on a makeshift dance floor. All those weddings and kisses and leave-takings, the faces of so many brides and grooms blurring in my head. Love is what it's all about, William had said to me all those months ago, although at the time these were just words. I wondered if he'd feel differently now. I knew I did, because standing there, tears streaking my face, I would have given anything for another shot at what I'd passed up, uneven and imperfect as it was. Life didn't begin cleanly, and it surely never ended that way. We were blessed with whatever we had in the middle. It made sense that it be messy, too.
Get back!
The cop shouted, pushing me off him with both hands, and then I did lose my grip, stumbling over my own feet and bumping against a parked car behind me. I could feel people looking at me, the sudden glare of attention as I came back into my own body and awareness, this here, this now. I put my hands to my face, sinking to my knees in the grass by the sidewalk, my feet throbbing beneath me. I was still there, huddled into myself, when I felt something scratchy and alive brush my cheek, then nose. I opened my eyes. Ira.
Hey,
I whispered, not quite sure he was real, even as I reached out, touching the wiry scruff at his neck. His tail, now waving, thumped the car behind him.
What are you?
A shadow fell over me then, and I looked up, past his wriggling body, to see Ambrose standing above me. I thought I might be dreaming until I saw the pink soda in his hand, along with the end of the dog's leash, his wrinkled shirt, that one curl loose over his forehead in the heat. Not the idealized details of dreams or fantasies, but those of real life, this life. As he crouched down, his face worried, to get closer to me, he was about to say something, but I didn't give him the chance. Already I was reaching up, my arms tight around his neck, and I pulled him to me and pressed my lips against his. At first I could feel his surprise, but then he was responding, his hand moving through my hair, fingers against my neck. It was primal and epic, nothing like mellow, and as it went on for what felt like forever, I could hear traffic beginning to resume, Ira circling us, barking, the world moving on. This time, though, I was okay to be left behind a few minutes for a kiss, a beginning, my own walk, sunset or not, whatever I was allowed. Chapter 27 B, it's Luna. Can I come in? No answer. I looked down at the water in my hand, then my watch, which told me we had 10 minutes before the ceremony was supposed to begin. Reaching down, I tried the knob. When it turned, I gently pushed it open. Bee? I said again, peering inside. The room where she'd been getting ready was just above where the ceremony would take place, by the hotel's infinity pool. I could see the chairs we'd lined up earlier, now filled with guests, through the window.
Are you in here?
Still, nothing.
I pulled out my phone, ready to send a bride AWOL text if necessary, then walked past the small sitting area closer to the window. Down below, I could see William up by the flower-covered arch, checking his own watch. I saw him shoot a look down the aisle. A second later, my phone beeped. My mom.
Where is she?
I walked over to the bathroom door, which was closed, and stood listening for a second. Nothing. Then, distantly, a sniffle. Shit. Bathroom, I texted back. Then I knocked.
B?
A pause.
Yes?
It's Luna, I said.
We, need to get downstairs. One sec.
I heard her blow her nose, which did not bode well, and looked at my watch again. When the door opened, though, she was smiling, even with a tissue in one hand.
I'm allergic to something, can you believe it?
She asked, turning back to the bathroom counter, where I saw an array of over-the-counter allergy medicines lined up.
My big day, and I can't stop sneezing.
You still look beautiful, I said. It was true. Even with a bit of a red nose, her hair was perfect. Pearly pink lipstick in place, clearly happy.
Whew.
She smiled at me, then sneezed again.
Shoot,
she moaned, grabbing two more tissues out of the nearby dispenser.
This is not how I wanted this to go.
It will be fine, I said, handing her the water. I bet once you get outside, it will stop.
That's where most allergies originate, though, she said, blowing her nose. You forget I'm marrying a med student who probably did not expect, after all this planning and money, to be wed to someone whose nose is redder than a clown's.
I'm sure that is not what Kevin cares about, I told her, bending down to fluff the bottom of her form-fitting, lace-covered dress around her shoes. Weddings are about love, and love tolerates everything, even red noses.
Nicely put.
She cocked an eyebrow at me.
You're good at your job.
I was trained by the best, I replied. And I've got an extra pack of tissues. Slide one of these by your bouquet, and let's go. You don't want to keep everyone waiting. Another sneeze, and she was following me out of the bathroom and then the room as I texted, on our way, to my mom. As I pushed the button for the elevator, she said,
I bet you have a lot of these kind of stories to tell, huh? Allergic brides, cold feet, missing grooms.
Missing sons of brides?
I reminded her. It was your brother I had to drag in from the parking lot, remember? She sighed, making a face as the elevator doors slid open.
As if I could forget, you're a saint for putting up with him, much less dating him.
Well, it's never dull, I agreed.
What do you remember most, though?
She asked me as we stepped inside.
Your best wedding story ever. Humor me.
I had to think about it. There was the time the groom, nervous, stumbled backward into a pool during the vows. The mother-in-law who got drunk at the rehearsal dinner and made an hour-long toast, working her way around the room, detailing every beef she had with guests in attendance. The missing ring-bearer. The disaster. Distinct as they happened, now they all seemed like one big wedding, ongoing, leading all the way up to this one, my last for the near future. I left for school in 6 days.
There was this one girl, I said as the elevator creaked into motion.
Back in the spring, she was in tears, so scared. Asked me if I believed in true love lasting forever. It felt like a test.
What did you tell her?
I thought back to Deborah, sitting on the floor of the anteroom, her expensive dress puffed out all around her.
Nothing, I said. I didn't know what to say.
She looked at me, then down at the flowers she was holding, pink roses with white lilies, so fragrant I could smell nothing else.
Sounds intense, and maybe like a sign?
Maybe, I said.
but I'm hopeful it all worked out. Just then, the doors slid open, and there was my mother with the bridesmaids and flower girl, all lined up with their backs to us, ready for the procession. But I was looking at the end of the line, to the boy in a black tux with a rogue curl on his forehead, who now turned to face us, a smile breaking across his face. Seeing him, I knew what I'd say now if Debbie was again before me, posing the same question. I wouldn't even hesitate. Yes, definitely. As I passed by, Ambrose looped an arm around my waist, pulling me into him.
"I'm thinking about falling backward into the pool," he said, kissing my forehead, "just to liven things up."
"We don't need any more life. Just focus on your job," I said, although I lingered in that spot against him that I'd come to love.
"Says the person who is supposed to be off the clock,"
he replied, although he did straighten up and get into formation.
"You just can't do it, can you?"
"I can, and I am," I told him. Or at least I was trying.
"Okay, let's do this," my mom called out, gesturing for Bea to get into her place next to Ambrose, who offered his arm, giving me a wink as he did so. I smiled as she took it, then moved around them to make my way to the doors that led to the patio. When I pushed them open, William gave the signal, and the string quartet by the pool began to play.
"I love this part," I thought, as I moved up the side aisle to my seat in the third row. Technically, I was a guest today, although old habits clearly did die hard. And that was just fine, I thought, turning with the rest of the crowd to face the aisle as the mother of the bride began her walk. It was rare for things to be perfect and organized anyway, even with your best efforts. Embrace the messy, and when things do come together just right, you'll always be pleasantly surprised. This was a lesson I'd been learning a lot in the last couple of weeks, as one thing after another did just that. First, there was Ambrose. We'd been together ever since that night of my party, although bringing him back to the house and telling Ben everything that had happened was, well, awkward, to say the least. He'd been angry, and rightfully so, leaving with his roses and racket and a few choice words about my character. By that night, every picture of us was deleted from his profile, not that I'd expected differently. I could only hope he would forgive me someday, as well as find a girl with whom to make his own epic, real story. My mom and William were also still both coupled, bringing the number of our little band of cynics down to zero. We continued to let loose, though, when it came to brides, weddings, CGs, overbearing mothers-in-law, and people who charged the cupcakes before dinner was even served. As for Jilly, she was already crying about being separated from Michael Salem when she left for school at East U, even as I pointed out he would be less than an hour away, attending the U itself. Also, he drove a food truck, so was therefore mobile. On the upside for her, despite the naps, Mrs. Baker was not pregnant again. At least, not yet. As for me, I'd leave for school too, while Ambrose stayed in Lakeview, enrolling in part-time classes at the U as well, and, surprisingly, continuing to work for Natalie Barrett Weddings. He'd promised me he was going to get his driver's license back, when the state of California allowed it, so he and Ira could make the short trip to see me when I couldn't come back home. I knew long-distance relationships often didn't work, especially new ones, but I wasn't giving a lot of thought to endings. I'd had enough of those. And now here we were, with another wedding ceremony so full of potential, followed by the middle, with dancing and the toast, two hands holding a cake cutter, maybe even making a wish. And then the big finish. Well, you couldn't beat that. Cans tied to a shiny bumper, a bouquet lofted high in the air, that final wave as the car pulled away. Everything in weddings and life had its phases, and if you were smart, you learned to appreciate them all. What really mattered, though, were the people in those moments with you. Memories are what we have and what we keep, and I held mine close. The ones I knew well, like a night on the beach with a boy who would always live in my heart. And the ones yet to come with another. For now, though, I was choosing to believe we had time, plenty of it. But really, all I knew for sure was that somewhere soon in that long, messy middle stretching ahead, Ambrose would again reach out a hand, asking me to dance. And this time, I'd say yes. This is Carissa Vacker. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Once and For All by Sarah Dessen. This program was directed by Ted Bonnet. Executive producer, Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2017 by Sarah Dessen. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.